Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is ornithologist and wildlife monitor, Sahail Zenda. And we're talking about the New England Shorebird Guide. Sahail, it's such a pleasure to talk to you after all these years.
Mark, thank you very much for inviting me to be on the show.
Oh, it's a total pleasure. And you got to talk to Sheila before you got to talk to me.
Ah, lovely.
Now, we're here to talk about the New England Shorebird Guide, which is an online guide. Now, I'm going to say this totally honestly. I'm very skeptical about a lot of online resources. Because they let you down. I was shocked at how good this was. This was really helpful. Whose idea was this to come up with this?
I thought to myself, well, let's see. Let's go back a couple of steps. First of all, shorebirds.
Yeah.
What are they? We want to promote conservation, but we have to tell people what they're conserving. And shorebirds are kind of difficult to know because, for one thing, shorebird, when birders talk about shorebird, they don't mean herons, they don't mean gulls, they don't mean terns. There's a very specific group of birds, sandpipers, plovers, and a couple other small groups thrown in that are called shorebirds by North American birders. And that's the ones that I have been very interested in. And what I found is that when you talk to people about them, they haven't seen enough of them or don't know enough about them to sort of focus in, because these birds, most of the ones that we know about in Massachusetts, there's like 35 regular shorebird species that migrate through Massachusetts. A lot of them breed in the Arctic and winter in South America. And so they're only here for a few weeks, whereas there's a few species like piping plover, American oyster catcher, willet, that breed right here in Massachusetts.
And species, I should mention, species like killdeer and spotted breed across the state. They breed across the state.
And Wilson snipe.
Yep.
And others that are certainly local. The majority are long-distance migrants, and those are the ones people see the least of, and so they don't know a whole lot about them. And I thought to myself, field guides are good, but you need kind of like a detailed information about these birds, about all the plumages, and that's hard to do in a field guide. It's like, you know, you might got to have 30 feet, 25, 10, 15, 25, 30 photographs or images to show all the variations of a single individual, single species. And the way I could do that is through an online website that people can carry on their phone.
Wow.
Plus, you can blow it up and use two fingers to take an image and blow it up and see the details that I'm talking about.
I know. And that's what works so well on this site.
I'm glad you discovered that, because that was the intention. I set it up in order to be able to do that.
Well, it's not just that. Under every picture, not only can you blow it up, but the important field marks for identification are there on the photo. In other words, they're pointed out.
Right. The idea was to make it as visual as possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of text. I write a lot of stuff out, but if you don't use the text or you just read it at home, well, while in the field, looking at pictures should be enough. And I'm hoping that that's how it works for people.
Well, and it's not only visual, because you have links to all the calls of the shorebirds, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. Well, you say, oh, yeah, but you can't get that out of a book.
That's right. Exactly. That's correct.
So this was an amazing. So you came up with this idea. A lot of people come up with ideas that would be really good. How did you get this implemented?
Well, one of my other interests, by the way, is dragonflies.
I love dragonflies.
And at the time that I started this, there really was no field guide to the dragonflies of North America.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one field guide to dragonflies of Massachusetts that's really old. And
that's,
it's all photographed.
That's Blair's book, right?
You can't blow them up. Yeah, Blair Nicola did it. It's a great guide, but you can't blow them up. You can't see the details.
Oh, not only that, a lot of the photographs in that guide were taken with old digital technology, and so they all come off as a little bit dark.
Yes. I thought to myself, I really need to make stuff, the photos, such that they can be accessible and you can blow them up right on in the field.
Wow.
In real time. And that's what I aim for.
But wait a minute, Zale. So, okay, still, it's a great idea. Are you write code? Like, how do you get this implemented?
First of all, I was going to do this just for a local group of shorebird enthusiasts in Boston. And then my friend Bob Simist, who is part of that group, who is a very well-known birder in Massachusetts, said to me, no, this should be on the Bird Observer site.
Okay, we got to talk about what Bird Observer is.
Bird Observer is a magazine that's published in Eastern Massachusetts, but it's a New England birding journal. That's what it calls itself. And it is. It's been around for about 50 years. And I'm a firm exponent of that magazine. It's a great resource.
And full reveal, I write the book reviews for it.
Exactly. And Marcia Sallet, who is the editor, agreed to be my editor.
Oh, wow.
And she also persuaded the website developer for Bird Observer, who also does other birding sites, Eric Swansea, to create the code for this. So I did not write the code for this. I only created the content. And Eric made this website.
It's an amazing thing. It could not have been an easy thing to do.
So I wanted to tell you a little bit about something you mentioned earlier in our conversation about the details that you can find as you look at a bird in the field.
Mm-hmm.
I was at Plum Island when we were first exposing this to the public. That was a year ago in October. I was with a bunch of group of people at Plum Island, and we were looking for shorebirds, and we found one dowitcher. Now, dowitcher is a big migrant through Massachusetts. It's one of these 35 species of shorebirds that migrates through Massachusetts, but it's one of the commonest, except that day we only found one. And I said to myself, well, here's an opportunity to show people how to use this guy, how useful this guide is. I put the telescope on the bird and I focused it on the tertial feathers. The back end of the bird is where the longest feathers lie over the tail. On the juvenile of the short-billed dowitcher, it's very different from the juvenile long-billed dowitcher in that particular detail. And you could see it. There are all these people. I'm holding the phone up, showing them the image that compares the two birds.
Huh.
And people are looking at the bird and looking at the image on my phone and saying, oh, I get it now. It was just like, it was wonderful for me because it's like proof positive that you can actually use this thing in the field and figure out something that has been difficult. Those two birds are difficult to tell apart.
Oh, they are. They are absolutely. That's one of the common field problems of shorebirds in Massachusetts.
And there they were. That was the thing that I needed to show people. So anyway, I thought that was really fun time for me to just show people that feature, the ability to blow up an image and just look at the detail that you needed.
And I should mention that these migrant shorebirds also occur inland. I was just looking at some yesterday at a reservoir with low water. And the problem is when you have one dowitcher, say, coming through the interior part of Massachusetts, you have no idea what's common or uncommon, because that's an uncommon shorebird other species like yellowlegs and lee sandpipers are common migrants inland. But you see one dowager, and you really have got to pick out the field marks and pick them out well in order to identify it with any certainty. Because the long-billed dowagers are very uncommon inland.
But they do occur.
They do occur, but you need a good guide.
Exactly. Late in the season, you can count on either one. And this, I'm hoping, people will use this and become more familiar with them, because that's the other thing. Familiarity is really all about just being out there in the field. And if you don't know what you're looking for, and it's discouraging because there's no really good guide to this, you might ignore them. But if there's a guide right on your phone, I'm hoping people will go out there and look at them. And then comes the whole idea of how to conserve these things. Because, Mark, hey, I'm sure you've heard, but I need to repeat this on the air. These birds are in deep trouble. Numbers have gone crashing in the last 40, 50 years that I've been watching them. I've been doing a series of counts of shorebirds since the 1970s, mostly in East Boston and Revere and Winthrop, but elsewhere in Massachusetts too. These birds used to come through in the thousands.
Yeah, I know.
And now they're down to the tens, dozens at most. There is a species called Hudsonian godwit.
Oh, God. I can remember when I was in the 70s, when I was starting birding, going to like North Monomoy and seeing a bunch of them, or on Plum Island.
The Monomoy average number for Hudsonian in August was 200.
Yep.
Average number at Plum Island was about 100. At Belle Isle in East Boston, I used to get two dozen at a time. I have a photo of 37 in the air once.
Oh, wow.
That was a day when we had 53 of them in East Boston at Belle Isle Marsh.
And it's a spectacular shorebird, too. It's long-legged. It's large. It's got an enormously long bill. It's really an attractive bird to see. And within our lives, we've seen these numbers crash dramatically.
And they're very long-distance migrants. They breed in far northern Canada, and they winter in far southern South America. Some migrate as far as Australia or New Zealand. Most go to South America. And some used to stop in Massachusetts on the way south in the fall. And the last time I saw one was 3 years ago.
Jesus.
Whereas in the 80s, like I said, there were in the dozens right around where, in east part of Boston, and plenty more in Monomoy. And at one point, a friend of ours was going to propose that the Massachusetts legislature, make Hudsonian godwit the shorebird of the Commonwealth. You know how we have Massachusetts bird. He wanted to make Hudsonian godwit Massachusetts shorebird. Well, what a joke. So sad.
But, and that, by the way, I want to mention that that's true across the board with bird species. I mean, I've noticed fall migration, which used to be my favorite time to bird. The numbers of common migrants like blackbills and stuff like that have really gone down. And we should talk about what's causing this. And for shorebirds, you've got very specific problems, because not only is it where they breed and where they overwinter, but they stop along the way to fuel for the long flight south. So it seems like they're getting disruptive forces at all parts of their migratory journey.
One of the things that I discovered while doing research for this project of all the shorebird Massachusetts seas was to read Birds of World, which is a online resource from Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
It's accessible through libraries. That's how I got access to it. Lexington Library gave me access to this incredible resource. So basically go to this and you just type in the name of a bird and you get pages and pages and pages of digested information from all different possible sources. So like food, breeding, migrations, all these topics are covered for every single bird. And one of the things that I saw over and over is both on the breeding grounds and in wintering grounds, nearly everything eats insects. In migration on our shores, they're feeding on marine mollusks and worms and all this. But on the breeding areas, they're eating insects, insect larvae and insect adults. And what do we know about insects? The great insect catastrophe that's basically all over the world. When you drive down the road, there's no bugs on your windshield anymore.
And I was just reading
that. Weather. It used to be our windshields had to be wiped every 2 hours because there are bugs. There are no bugs dying in our windshields anymore. That means there's no bugs for all these creatures to eat. So that's one of my prime suspects for the crash in a lot of shorebirds and other birds.
But also in when places to stop over, for instance, migrating north, a lot of red knots feed on horseshoe crab eggs. And talk about a tough place to have any kind of wildlife is a shore on the ocean, because people are disturbing the area all over the place, and basically they're buying up the land and converting it to beachfront property. And not only that, horseshoe crabs are declining, and that's for a variety of reasons. Not only are they declining because the oceans are not doing so well either. And I suspect
that's
microplastic. Yeah.
Red knot, sanderling, ruddy turnstone, semi-palmated sandpiper, they all feed on the horseshoe crabs. Eggs, excuse me, not the crabs, on the eggs. The egg that they lay in places like Delaware Bay.
Yep.
And those horseshoe crabs themselves are being harvested for medicinal purposes and also for pet food.
Yeah.
It's just mind-boggling. And the numbers of horseshoe crabs have crashed because of this industry of just trawling for gigantic numbers of them. And so these birds need that food to get through their spring migration. They arrive in mid-April to mid-May, and they fatten up before heading to the Arctic to lay their eggs. And if they don't get the food, they're not going to make that trip. Or when they get there, they're not fat enough to actually nest. That whole business of the horseshoe crab thing has been tackled by the state of New Jersey to some extent. Delaware is not doing as much for that issue. But, it's a very, very serious issue. And I'm hoping that some of the conservation people can solve it.
Well, we're going to run out of time soon, but I want to mention that if you're on the shore in winter, there are shorebirds still that are on the Massachusetts coast in winter. Probably the most common shorebird you're going to see right along the shore in winter is?
Sanderling.
Yeah.
And they have crashed, but they're still around.
And they're the classic shorebird. Even if you don't know anything about shorebirds, if you walk along the shore in winter, you see this small, black-billed, black-legged, sort of grayish shorebird running along the shore, following the waves in and out. That's the bird, the sanderling.
And that's a sandpiper, classic sandpiper.
Yep.
And they are worldwide, and they've crashed.
Yeah.
I mean, they're still around, but we used to see them in the thousands. And now, flocks of 20 to 50, 75 at most.
Well, part of the problem, Zahil, seems that people who don't have a long memory about how things used to be think they're seeing a lot of sanderlings now when they see a flock of 20.
I'm here to tell you that 50 years ago was different. Now, a lot of these shorebirds, by the way, a lot of these shorebirds were seriously hunted in the 19th century, not necessarily sanderlings, but even sanderlings, they were hunted and for food, human food, and for pig food.
But I mean, they were a common market item. You would go to the market and see godwits, and see all the different, especially the large shorebirds, plovers, were considered delicious.
In the 1920s, a migratory bird treaty was passed by Canada and the U.S. so that hunting of these birds was eliminated or reduced anyway. And the numbers came back. It's not like this tremendous decline in numbers hasn't happened before. It happened before, but people took care of it and they came back. And then because of other environmental issues and pressures, the crash started occurring in the 90s, and it's continuing now, and it's very, very serious. But it doesn't mean we can't bring them back. We just have to make the effort, and we have to know what's going on. And this is why I made the guide, in order to let people know, this is what we got. These are the creatures who are our neighbors. They live in this same world. They are part of our civilization. They just have their own little cultures, and we have to be respectful of them, and we have to figure out what it takes to bring them back to reasonable populations.
Okay, we have a few minutes left, and I want to mention that what we're going to do is we're going to put a URL on the web on the description of this show on the WICN website, and then you're going to be able to actually connect and actually learn how to install the QR code so that you can have this on your phone. I think it's wild. But I want to talk to you personally, Zahil, because we haven't ever had this conversation. What's your favorite shorebird?
What's my favorite?
Yeah.
Oh, shorebird.
Yep.
Greater yellowlegs.
Okay, explain yourself.
It is a regal, tall, gray shorebird with a long bill and long yellow legs. And it's got these great calls.
Yeah.
And it warns everybody. It's like if you come up too close to a shorebird roost, yellow legs are the ones to let everybody know. Hey, there's an intruder. So it's a great bird. I love those birds. They're pretty common.
Well, I just had one yesterday out at in Holden. So right here.
Everywhere.
So they pass through. They do migrate through. And they are. It's funny because when you haven't seen one all summer, because I'm birding inland now.
They migrate through in the spring. They nest not that far further north. They don't go to the Arctic. And then they migrate back through, and then they winter in the southern U.S. and Mexico.
What was your, as you grew up, what was your shorebird that you saw that convinced you that's what I want to do? I want to monitor shorebirds.
I had both Hudsonian and Marbled Godwits at Revere, Point of Pines and Revere.
Oh, yeah.
And that among other, there were a lot of others, but those two really got me. And they're brilliant, and they're different from each other and gorgeous.
Well, especially the marbled godwits. I have a soft spot for marbled godwits, and I've seen flocks of them in California, but not here. Here, they're the rarer of the two normally migrating through.
Oddly, Hudsonian is now the rarer of the two. I see more Hudsonian.
Isn't that weird?
Less frequently than marbled, but that's both kind of scarce now.
That's pretty scary, Zahil.
Yeah.
So are the plans to continue to expand this particular website? Because not all the species are in yet.
I have now 28 species on the site, and I have four work waiting in the wings to go on, and I'm working on four more. So, yeah, I'm adding little by little. I have to add more. It takes a while. Each one takes a lot of research, and I have to go dig up the photos. I look at a lot of photos to try to find the ones that just show exactly what I want to show.
I think that's
one of the things, by the way, that is difficult to find is juxtaposed species. So you can see the two dowitchers together.
Oh, yeah.
Dowitcher and stilt sandpiper together. Those are similar enough to it's nice to show them together and see how you can tell them apart.
And that's one of the other things, because I noticed on the website you also put in similar species. So when you're looking at one species, you also, in the same section, you have other species that you could be mistaking this bird for.
Yes.
That's
pretty important to me, right?
So what's missing? The site's got everything.
Well, killdeer is missing.
Well, okay, species. Killdeer and spotted sandpiper are missing. And then
and the Wilson's plover.
And woodcock.
Snipe. Woodcock.
Well, yeah, you know, a lot of people don't realize the woodcock and snipe are shorebirds too. They're the inland.
They're sandpipers.
They are. So you use sandpipers. You don't use shorebirds.
Well, killdeer is a plover.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All
and
right.
There's a bunch of European ones, and there's some pelagic ones like the phalaropes that I still haven't covered. But I've covered, I believe, most of the ones we're going to see like regularly in the state for now.
Well, killdeer and spotted sandpiper, I would argue, are more commonly seen than any of the other ones.
It is. You're right. And it's coming. It's coming.
So you're going to work on a gull site after this, huh?
Listen. I still got a bunch to go on.
Okay, we're completely out of time. My guest tonight has been ornithologist and wildlife monitor Sahail Zende. And we've been talking about the New England Shorebird Guide, which is a great service, I guess you could say, offered by the journal Bird Observer. Sahail, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much for this interview. And
we'll talk again.
Tell people, go out there and get your shorebirds. They're going through
right now. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.